Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 3 of The Cure for Chronic Pain with Nicole Sachs, LCSW. That is me. I'm Nicole, and today we have such a special treat. I sat down and interviewed my client, Marion, who is on this journey along with all of us. We're all on this journey, and has gone from a person who was debilitated in fear and in chronic pain to someone living a life beyond her wildest dreams with everything that she could have wanted or wished for. And as is with all of us, it was not an easy path and it was not without its peaks and valleys. But Marion has been generous enough to come on today and to speak with us about her chronic pain journey and everything that she went through to get her to where she is today. And I am so glad and thrilled to have her share her story with us today. So without further ado, I give you Marion. So hi there, this is Nicole Sachs here, and we are talking today to my client, Marion. And the reason I wanted to invite Marion on today is I have the privilege of meeting and talking to so many beautiful, interesting people. And when they are willing to come and share their story with people suffering, struggling, hoping that there's an answer for their chronic pain, I love them to do so, because that is the way that we inspire and help others to know that this is possible for them and this is possible in their own lives. So for those of my very deep, longstanding fans, you may remember Marion from her Hall of Fame appearance on the Home and Family show with me. We may have won an Emmy for that, did we, Marion, do you think?
I really feel like we should have.
Yeah, we may have.
It was my breakout performance.
Mine too, circa 2016, Hallmark Home and Family show, if anybody wants to dig up that archive. But in any case, Marion, thank you so much for being here. And maybe you could just share with anyone listening what it was like for you.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here and be able to take the time to share what's been going on with me. So really my journey started in about late 2011, 2012. I started to have a lot of like neck and shoulder pain. And at the time I was running my own design practice, working very late hours, and kind of doing it independently. So really basically shouldering a huge burden of having about 5 or 6 clients, and really just feeling my way through that process. I didn't really have a whole lot of experience at the time. And so, you know, it was causing me a lot of stress. And so over time, the pain in my neck and shoulder started to radiate down my hand. I started to lose the grip in my left hand, and that's the hand that I draw with. And I also use one of those like pen things with my computer. That's how I kind of design. And I started freaking out and thought to myself, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to do my job. And so I was doing things at the time like going to massage therapists, taking tons and tons of ibuprofen and really trying to muscle it out on my own. And at some point I realized like, oh my gosh, like this is getting so bad. And of course I went running to a doctor. And at the time I immediately was told to go into physical therapy. So I started physical therapy and, you know, had someone working on me 3 days a week, trying to like relieve tension around my neck. I had an MRI done. And at that time they told me that I had bulging discs, like basically at sort of the base of my neck. And that they thought that maybe it was something called thoracic outlet syndrome. And, you know, to me at the time, oh my gosh, ding, 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 ding. I have an actual issue. I have some sort of state of not wellness within my neck and it's pinching a nerve and oh gosh, look at that. It's the answer. And that's why.
And is that a little bit of a relief at that moment actually to say, oh, I have a thing. So we'll just treat the thing I have.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and we're always like, I'm always like, if I got a problem, yo, I'll solve it. Like, let me figure out what it is and I'm going to go attack that thing and make it go away. And the real bummer was that it didn't, you know? And so I spent a fair amount of time in physical therapy and still just had the pain. And then it started to snowball. And I was doing things like, I'm going to buy a standing desk and I'm going to start researching all these different theories online about like, oh gosh, it's my posture. This is a repetitive strain injury. This is because I work at my computer all day long. Oh gosh, now I'm going to buy an app that tells me to stand up and move around every 45 minutes. Then I'm going to get a standing desk, and then I'm going to start doing very certain exercises to help my like posture and my alignment, and all of this is going to make me better.
I want to say that just to interrupt you, just to interrupt you, Marian.
Interrupt me all you want.
Just to interrupt you. I would like to say, because I think this is a really important point you're bringing up, that what happens to people, what happened to you, and what happens to all of us, everybody is Marian right this second, is that we start to assign meaning. Life, human beings are only attached to something if we can give it some meaning. And that is beautiful when it comes to loving our children and being good colleagues and having pride in ourselves. But it's very dangerous when it comes to what's wrong with me, what's going to happen to me, pre-grieving stuff that may or may not go down in our lives. And so what I see you talking about is that you started to assign a tremendous amount of meaning to these words, which were your diagnoses, and to your perception of what your life might look like. Would you say that's true?
Absolutely. And I went into total fixer mode. Must fix, must look at every aspect of what's going on with me and how I behave and how can I fix it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, obviously, you know, hindsight is 20/20. I think that's when it all started to fall apart, because I kept feeling like I had to change myself to get better. So anyway, I had the standing desk. I was firmly in the camp of I have repetitive strain injuries. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my hands too were so tight. My wrists were really tight. They felt hot and inflamed. I went to another doctor, more of an integrative doctor. And he was like, oh gosh, you're starting to show signs of carpal tunnel. And here's some things that you can do and some exercises, right? And then he said, hey, I want you to work with one of our massage therapists here in this practice. So I was getting massage therapy one place. I was getting it in another place. Then mm-hmm. I started going to a trigger point therapist. And that's like a whole nother theory that I don't want to get into now. But so now I have multiple people working on me like at different points during each week. I'm spending an incredible amount of money out of pocket for all of this. And I don't actually get much better. What I do get is the loving kindness of people trying to help mm-hmm. me. And I think that that's what helped me keep going. You know what I mean? And so I'm telling you, this was going on 2012, 2013, into 2014. So I spent 3 years. And over the course of those 3 years, there was zinging pain in my shoulder blades. There was stiffness in my neck. There was tingling happening throughout both my wrists and arms, mostly on my left arm. I had weakness and couldn't really write. I couldn't really write very well because my hand was just so degraded, I guess, from whatever the obstruction was on this nerve. I had
or pain your perceived obstruction. Yep. Yes.
I had foot pain, such foot pain that I was wearing all these like orthotic inserts in my shoes. And when I was going to the trigger point therapist, she was saying, oh gosh, you have such a misalignment in your posture. And that's probably why you're feeling so much pain. And so she started giving me all these tools. I had something that was like the equivalent of a car buffer. I'm not even kidding. No, check this
out.
This was when it was like, oh shit, things are getting crazy. I was using something that it was truly like a buffing like tool. It was like a high speed rotating thing that had like a little bit of like a muff over it. And you basically took it and you just put it on the super sore spot on your body. And it would just like ultra, ultra, ultra shake it to the point where it kind of like, you know, was drawing blood towards that area. And it was like, I was getting some relief from that. Right.
So I want to say something about this, mm-hmm. All these different accoutrements, whether they be the actions, like we go to get therapeutic massage, or a gadget that you're describing. I just want to say, So people understand that Marion and I are not making light of this, nor are we diminishing the very many ways in which our society is trying to help people with chronic pain. Everything is well-meaning. All these mm-hmm. doctors, all these physical therapists, all these alternative practitioners and creators of these gadgets, everybody, I believe, okay, maybe I'm a little bit of a Pollyanna, I believe people are coming from a good place. I think people want others to heal. I think people want others to succeed in life and to shine their light. What I come with, the message that I come to carry is, with all this well-meaning stuff, the reason it doesn't work is because you are so mired in your fear and your repressed emotions that have absolutely no idea how and why they need to get out, that none of this stuff stands a chance. And that mm-hmm. is where I want to really help people wake up, because I listen to a story like yours, Marion, and I'm like, you poor thing. And these doctors, they're all really trying to help you. It's just, it's a losing battle until you figure out that the base of all this, that the bedrock upon which this is built, needs to be recognized first. And so anyway, that's just what came to mind when you're talking about this buffer.
Right. It's so true, because I was looking at this tool, this like high intensity vibrating buffing tool. And I thought that was going to be the answer. And, mm-hmm. you know, spoiler alert, the real answer wasn't. And it ended up being more of an inside job, meaning like inside mm-hmm. my emotions and my, you know, spirituality and how I felt about myself. Mm-hmm. So I kept on this amazing journey of spending tons of money going to doctors and using tools. I had quite a toolkit, let me tell you. Yeah. I had Theracanes and buffing tools and crazy hard balls with nubby edges that hurt like a son of a gun. And I was rubbing all these things all over myself. I was talking about my pain constantly. And just to give a little bit of an insight and a perspective, you know, in 2012, I ran the Chicago Marathon.
Wow.
So before all of this, I was very physically active and very physically determined as a human being. And I had like a stress fracture and multiple muscle tears happen because I kind of ramped up my training for the marathon in a sort of irresponsible way. I just like really jumped in and got going. And, you know, sometimes those rookie moves will get you a few injuries at the end of the day. And I do recall when I was having those injuries looked at, it was called to my attention that I had something called osteopenia, which is low bone density. And you know what, honest to God, like anybody who's tiny of frame the way that I am, they just have it because they're just small, right? They got like smaller bones, hence low bone density.
Yeah.
Right. But at the time, you know, that was being presented to me as this kind of like, it's kind of like cuspy. It could be like, you could get like, you know,
osteoporosis.
Yeah. You could get osteoporosis later in life, you know, and I just happen to be one of those people that you tell me something like that and I'm going to go home and cry and boohoo and start worrying. Yeah. And I'm not saying that that was the moment and time when all of this started to spiral out of control. I think it was like an amazing convergence of work stress, you know, hearing things like that and feeling just a little bit like scared inside. So ultimately, in 2015, I went through a lot. I got married, which was amazing. My husband and I were building a house. He's an architect, and we had this wonderful opportunity for him to design and build our house. And all of that stuff comes with a lot of stress. So, hi, I'm Marion. Yeah, I run my own business. I'm having a house built by my husband, and I'm also getting married. And that's when really everything hit the fan, because I then developed a lot of anxiety.
Yes.
So I had all the physical pain and was dealing with that, you know, bird by bird, day by day, just trying to like muddle through the day and still retain some level of activity, physical activity. And then the anxiety set in. And anyway, like what ended up happening was one morning, my husband, I think he just kind of had it, you know, he's a really loving and kind and supportive guy and pretty easygoing. And I think he had just like reached his limit with, you know, being with a woman who spent the beginning and the end of each day using all of these like physical therapy tools all over my body in this like effort to heal myself, right?
Absolutely. And you know what? Another thing that I think is worth mentioning, similar to addiction, chronic pain is a family disease. You know, to be in this, and I understand any disease is a family disease. Like if you're suffering with cancer, your partner has to, you know, be with you and feel that pain of watching a loved one suffer. But chronic pain is so endless, and it has such a helpless quality to it because people don't really know what to do, that it really becomes a family disease, and our loved ones suffer as well. So I just want to bring some empathy to that point.
Absolutely. And so anyway, he kind of just... he didn't freak out on me, but I think he lost it a little bit and was so overwhelmed by this stuff. And he said something to the effect of, "Do you think this could all be in your brain? Could you just be making all of this up?" And I felt like I had been slapped in the face.
Of course. Yeah. Nobody wants to hear that. And that's, thank you for saying it so blatantly, because I actually think that that is a really great thing for me to just point out, that the pain is not in your head. What Marion is discussing here certainly in no way, shape, or form was something that she was creating or making up. But the what Sig, her husband, was saying in his moment of just losing his shit was, is something else possibly going on here? You know, for me, I see that as sort of like a divine moment where even though he didn't have the right words for it, because clearly it wasn't in your head or in your brain and you weren't creating it, there was something going on that he couldn't put his finger on that wasn't right. Something was going on that maybe needed to be investigated. So that's kind of how I see that kind of beautiful moment.
Yep. At the time, it did not feel like a beautiful moment. It felt like maybe you shouldn't be my fiancé.
Right. Maybe you should shut the F up. Maybe.
Right. Get away from me. I hate you.
Right.
So we definitely, you know, got in a fight. I iced him out. He iced me out. And there was kind of a couple day time period where I wasn't really liking him or wanting to speak to him. Anyway, I get on the almighty Google.
Yes.
And I type in
above. Yes.
I type in, "Could I be causing my own pain?" question mark.
Wow, that is a profound moment. Kind of gives me a little blinky teary eyes, because it's such a moment of like sadness. I always say life is such an intricate pattern of beauty and sadness mixed together. And that's what that moment feels like for me.
It was definitely beauty and sadness. And, you know, just within those first few seconds, as I scan, you know, the top 10 entries in Google, there's a book, Healing Back Pain by John Sarno, that shows up on Amazon. I pick up the book, I don't pick it up. I go to the site. I read like the first three pages they give you, you know, in the preview.
Yeah, the sample.
And I'm like, yep. And I'm like, oh my God, I need this book.
Yeah.
So I get the book. I read the book cover to cover. It is me to a T. It's one of the first times I ever felt understood as a personality.
Yes.
As a person.
Totally.
And I immediately felt some relief from my pain. And I want to go back in time and just say that, you know, in that 3-year long journey where I was working with all these different types of, you know, therapists, physical, trigger point, whatever, I also met with a man who was a rolfer, this guy, Matthew, and we worked together for over a year. And he really, you know, was inviting me at the time to start thinking about my spiritual life. And I think in his own soft sell kind of abstract way, he wanted to encourage me to think about exploring my inner life and seeing if that could have some sort of impact on this pain that I was feeling.
Right.
But he didn't really offer me a step-by-step program or anything, right? He just was like, you know, be curious, Marion. Have you ever like heard about Joseph Campbell? What about reading this book? Or here's a poem, right? And what was so interesting is anytime I brushed up against a little bit of like deeper feeling or deeper acknowledgement of self or of spirituality, I would cry or I would get really, really upset. And it was so interesting to me. Like now it's so interesting to me now, looking back, there was such a wellspring of emotion that wanted to pop up in me back then.
It was screaming to pop up. It was begging.
Right? Yeah, and I didn't know how.
You didn't know how.
So I really love and appreciate this guy, Matthew, because he said, you know, are you ready for change is what he said to me the first time I got on his Rolfing table. And I was like, I think I am. And it's interesting. I got kind of far with him. It never solved the pain part, but mm-hmm. I learned a lot with him. Then I read the Sarno book and I was like, oh, wow, cool. I feel a little bit better. And I remember Matthew telling me, someday, Marian, you will feel no pain. Even if it's for like 5 minutes, you'll yes. recognize 5 minutes of not pain. And yes. that will remind you that you can live a life without pain.
Wow.
And
I got to meet this guy.
Yeah, it was really amazing. And so I felt a week of not pain after reading that book. And I was flipping out. You know, it's kind of like, you know, an alcoholic who first goes to AA for the first time and feels really understood, or like
yeah.
you read the Bible or something. I don't know. You have this like profound experience where you're like, oh my God, I get it. I was like running around telling everybody, you know, I can be better. I read this book.
Evangelical.
I was evangelical. Exactly. That's it. I was evangelical.
I understand.
And so that was all cool. And then guess what? The pain started to come back a little bit.
Okay. So let's talk about that for 1 second for those of you who are like, you know, so if I always put myself in the position of what it must feel like to hear something for the first time. And so if it were me and I was struggling, first I would be like, oh shit, she was out of pain for a week. You know, I could never be out of pain for a week. And then I would be like, oh shit, then it came back. So I feel the need as the expert in the room to address that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And here's the deal. Here's the deal with this process that I teach and that Dr. Sarno taught me. You have a lot of meaning that you've placed on this pain. So sometimes there is an instant relief, not everyone, but sometimes there's an instant relief to understand that there's another layer to this and it's possible for you to heal. It's almost euphoria. And it intercepts that fight or flight response that has been going on in your mind-body system, and it makes you feel safe for a moment and the pain signals stop firing. And that is absolutely possible. Happens often. Doesn't necessarily have to happen. It doesn't mean that you don't you're not going to heal just because it doesn't happen to you. And also, but what will ultimately happen, and this is something that I want people to hear even more, the reason that we have pain is because our mind-body system, our nervous system, and our brain perceives our repressed emotions as a greater predator than physical pain. That's it. It's as mm-hmm. simple as that. Life is a choice between what hurts and what hurts worse. And for your brain and your nervous system, for whatever reason, repressed emotions send up a higher flare than physical pain, which keeps you slow and quiet and in the dark and laying in your bed and not putting yourself out there where the world is a dangerous place. And that is a gross misperception of happiness, but it is the physical state of our bodies as evolution stands today. And so if indeed you have this brief euphoric period of feeling pain-free, you still need to do the work for enduring healing. Because when I say do the work, I mean learning how to safely allow these repressed emotions to rise from the subconscious to the consciousness, to your consciousness, so you can no longer have to ward against them. You no longer have to protect yourself from the possibility of their arising. So I just wanted to say that because Marian, obviously I can see where this is going, that you obviously needed to do the deeper work in order to create enduring pain-free healing in your life.
Yep, absolutely. So, you know, I really dug in to the sort of TMS community. I got on that TMS wiki. I started entering my story and mm-hmm. getting support there. I took a class here in Chicago, a 6-week class.
And that's a shout out to Dr. Strax.
Yep, absolutely. And I started to feel better, right? And mostly what I realized about myself is that I needed a forum and a community to share my feelings with. Mm-hmm. And so even being in this like closed, you know, let's call it maybe 8 to 10 person class, or even being on a forum online and just starting to talk about my pain, starting to talk about what my childhood experience was as a part of healing and as a part of getting to those deeper issues that could be associated with the pain that I felt. It was, I mean, I can't explain it. It was like a personal reawakening.
Yeah.
And I still was in pain, but I had hope at that point. So whereas for, let's call it 3 to 4 years, I had pain without hope.
Yeah.
I felt I was aging too quickly because I was young.
How old were you when this began?
35 years old.
Yeah.
34, 35 years old. And I felt like I was dying. I felt like I was 65, 75 years old. I was, you know, like, oh my gosh. And plus my mother has rheumatoid arthritis that has been crippling. And my dad died early of many, like he had all sorts of health issues. And I'm sure that that wasn't helping either, right?
Yeah.
Thinking that, oh my gosh, I am my parents' daughter and look at me, I'm falling apart at age 35.
Of course.
So anyway, I started to feel pain, but also hope. And the hope was really helping me get through each day. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it was Dr. Strax who introduced me to Nicole. And he saw, I think, in me a person who had made great strides, but yet needed to do that deeper work.
Yeah.
And I was at the time like so hard on myself that I was embarrassed that I needed to do the deeper work.
You're not alone in that.
I always wanted to be the type of person that was just doing well and nobody thought that there was any imperfection in me. I'm serious. I wanted to be a great graphic designer. I wanted to be a great friend. I wanted to be an awesome girlfriend. You know, I wanted my hair to look pretty. I wanted my house to be a certain way. Everything in my world needed to be so exactingly exact,
mm-hmm.
and perfect that there wasn't room for like truth and humanity and imperfection and embracing reality. You know,
yes.
I had just
and vulnerability.
Vulnerability. I had just worked myself into this sort of construct of what my life was supposed to be like. There was no wiggle room. There wasn't any.
Right.
So even when I met with you, Nicole, you know, I think that like now we can like almost laugh about
right. Wow.
what it was like before. You know, I just had a lot of layers that I think people were going to have to get through, even myself, to get to the real meat of, you know, what was hurting me inside.
So let's talk a little bit about that. Let's talk a little bit about doing the work, because one of the things that I admire about you, Marian, is your resolve to do the work. And anyone who is listening to this, who has attempted journal speak and having a journal speak practice, has probably understood the pull of resistance, because when we start to do this practice of excavating our emotions, one of the symptoms, and I will call it a symptom, even though it seems just like a thought in your mind that you have better things to do or you're too tired or who needs to do this or it'll never work. That's a thought, but I will call it a symptom, because resistance to do this work, I believe, is just as similar to a back pain or a migraine or fibromyalgia or irritable bowel or anything that is afflicting you, because it's just trying to keep you safe. Your resistance mm-hmm. is trying to keep your brain and your nervous system saying, okay, well, it's better for her not to feel these things. So maybe she's got something better to do, or maybe this journal speak thing, you know, how could that ever work? An emotional exercise curing a physical condition? Come on. You know, you give yourself, you have these quote unquote good ideas. And I believe it's just resistance. So one thing I've always admired about you, Marian, is that you pushed past that resistance and you freaking did the work. And so I'd love for you to help people understand, once you, you know, were awakened to this by Sarno, and then you did Strax's course, and then Strax referred you into my practice, and you and I started working together, help people understand what you did. Because, you know, I know we're going to get to it, but spoiler alert, Marian's like friggin' awesome and not having pain anymore. So let's talk about what you did.
Okay. So it wasn't easy. I listened to you, Nicole. I read your book. Mm-hmm. I learned what journal speak was, and I learned how it was different than regular journaling, and how really it was this way of expressing pure and raw emotion, in a sort of stream of consciousness way, in an unedited way. And I tried it out. I was super embarrassed while I was doing it. I mean, very, very.
Yeah.
So very, very embarrassed, because I was letting like terribly dark thoughts out on paper. And I had all these judgments. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I just said that. People shouldn't say those things. That's not who I am. That's not what I want to be. And I was saying things like, I hate my house, the house that we just built. I'm so mad at my husband for putting me through the stress of building our house. I hate my mother. I don't feel like she took good care of me. I hate myself.
Yeah.
Because I'm not good enough. And, you know, I think here's the thing. It was really interesting to me to see how I couldn't even feel a visceral thought because I had so many judgments and ideas placed upon those thoughts that it was like this crazy complex web of shoulds and this and that and perception and who I want to be versus who I am and how should I feel and this is how I feel but I can't express how I feel, that it was like this jumbled up mess. And I think what you encouraged me to do time and time again when we spoke was, doesn't matter, just let it out, let it out, let it out, let it out. And it's okay, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. And let the wellspring bubble up and know that you're not going to go crazy, that these are feelings that are, you're safe. These are feelings. They are fleeting. And I did it, man. I went to the mattresses. I did the journaling. I would wake up at 5:30 in the morning. I'd cry so hard because like all of these like limiting feelings that I have had bouncing around in the back of my head, like this little, you can't do it, little devil on my shoulder, limiting me, telling me I wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
I actually gave a voice to that. I really put that on paper. You suck, Marion. You're not good at what you do. This person's better than you. Oh, you know, you're not this, you're not that. You can't do this, you can't do that. Or God, I just don't even want to live. Yeah. I feel like I'm so tired of all the self-judgment, the judging of myself, the judging of others, all the judgment. It makes me so exhausted. I don't even want to live, right? And through this process of journaling and getting through these deep, scary emotions, I always realized at the end of my journaling, each session, I always calmed down.
Yeah.
I always went to, I'm so scared, I'm so scared, I'm so angry, whatever, to like, I'm so pissed, I'm so this, I'm so that. It would all get ratcheted up quite intensely. And then at the end, it would kind of be like, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. I would be telling myself it's okay. I would be, you know, talking myself down off the cliff.
And I want to say one thing about the science here, because this, what you're describing, this arc that you go through in your journaling process, it happens a lot. It happens a lot to me, and I get it reported to me a lot from people around the world working this program, is that you're introducing a toxin, right? You're introducing a toxin into the environment, which is, I'm going to admit that I hate my house, I hate my mother, I hate myself, you know, in many ways, in many intricate, specific ways. And your system is going to start to ratchet up. It's going to start to prepare for a battle. You know, are we going to have to go to war? And then once you continue in, and I recommend to a 20-minute journal speak practice. Some people go longer, but I'd say 20 minutes is the minimum to let this process really take shape. Your brain and your nervous system start realizing, wait a second, actually, there's no war to be fought here. She's saying all these things. Nothing has imploded or exploded. The world hasn't come crashing down. She's continuing to say them. And it kind of crescendos at some point, and maybe you cry it out, or maybe you scream, or maybe neither of those happens. And, you know, you're just present with it. And it starts to come down, and the thoughts that start coming into your purview are, you know what, actually, I'm really okay, actually. Or, wow, you know, I can have a little compassion for my mother. She really did do a shitty job, but my God, look what she was up against. Or whatever revelations start to come in. And it doesn't happen in every session, but I'll tell you something. If you persist with this, it happens more and more that your system starts to realize you're safe. And if you continue doing it, that compounds into a lifetime of safety, which is a lifetime where pain is not necessary to protect you. So I just wanted to throw that in there.
And the short form version of really what I went through, and I think what were pivotal moments within this journey that I've had with Nicole, is that I really acknowledged some painful moments in my life. And, you know, everybody has them. I happen to be the type of personality that never, like, if something was shameful or really, really painful, I really wanted to keep that in a dark closet in the corner of my mind and package it up neatly and just leave it there and, like, basically hide it from myself, hide it from others, and kind of edit it out of my life experience. No, it's not good. Oh, I was treated poorly. I was abused. I was left out. I was hurt. I was talked to in a way that was shaming. I'm going to take all of those and put them in a closet, lock it up and say, no, that didn't happen to me. And look at me, I'm okay. And what I learned through this process is that that stuff doesn't go away. And if you don't embrace those pieces of your life, and if you don't look at them and acknowledge them and say, hey, that's a part of what makes me me. And actually, it's what makes me wonderful. It's not what makes me broken. It's not what makes me bad. For me, and maybe not everyone is the same, I needed to look at those things. I needed to excavate them. I needed to talk about them. I needed to bat them around in my head, put them on paper, tell a friend, tell my sister, tell my husband, talk more about those things. And I think it's ultimately that stuff, those acknowledgments, that tipped me over the edge and really started to remove the pain. I grew up in an alcoholic home, and it was intense growing up. I saw and felt things that people, you know, I mean, it's unfortunate. We shouldn't have to feel those things, especially like for me at a young age.
Yeah.
And I feel like I admitted that that stuff had an impact on me. And I really started to acknowledge that I needed more support around those topics. I started going to Al-Anon. And, you know, so I guess what the thing is I started doing journal speak to realize that there were so many aspects of my life that I wanted to tuck away that I really needed to embrace and say, this is a part of who I am. And if it's hurting me or if it's limiting the way I think about myself and others, fuck it.
Yeah.
I need to get after it. I need to get after it, you know? And that's ultimately when the pain started to go away, was when I really truly embraced what my life actually was made of.
And you know what? And you know what also, Marian, which is amazing, when I'm listening to you as a psychologist, when I'm listening to you, what I think to myself is, and wouldn't it be just amazing if indeed you and I were just in a conversation about having a better life, right? Having better mental health or having more happiness in your life. And wouldn't it be amazing if people did this process and they had a new outlook on life, which of course you absolutely do. But what's really amazing and what I am inviting every person listening to understand is Marian's pain went away. Like this is where we bridge the gap between what people used to understand and what people are starting to understand now. Everybody, I'm sure, anyone evolved would listen to this conversation and say, well, isn't that great? You know, this is a path to better mental health, to more insights, to more presence. Yeah, we're also talking about this is a woman who is essentially being run by her pain, whose entire life was completely paralyzed because she couldn't think of one other thing besides how much pain she was in. This process made her pain go away. This is something that I want to like shake everyone's shoulders and be like, you don't have to live in physical pain as a result of the way you think and the way you were raised and the way in your nature. You know, this is very real.
Yeah. I want to build on that too, because I think, you know, I'm not telling the most concise linear story, but I think it's important to now go back and let you know that outside of that 4-year window of like real physical pain that was limiting me, I can now look back at all sorts of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Irritable bowel syndrome, just like body pain, aches and pains that felt flu-like. My whole life I had been battling physical manifestations of my emotional
we all do.
Stuff.
Yes.
And so now here I sit in 2018 and I'm like very aware when I'm having sort of an episode.
Yeah.
Whether it's panic and anxiety, stomach problems, IBS, even like skin stuff, like
yes,
eczema,
absolutely.
When it pops
totally.
Out on
yes.
my hands,
uh-huh.
I know, like I can sit and look at it and say, yeah, shit is really stressful right now at work, at home, having a new baby, this and that. I can look at that and say, this isn't a disease state that's going to take me down. This is my body telling me, hey, Marianne, you got a lot going on. And it's my job to connect those dots and say, how can I be kinder to myself? How can I relax a little bit? What are actions or steps I can take right now to lessen the load, whether it's journaling or doing something like really warm and fuzzy for myself,
self-care,
like just laying in bed. Yeah, just laying in bed and watching like a Netflix movie. Or is it like a little cat scratching at my door saying, hey, there's something you need to take care of right now. Whether it's like, you know, talking to my boss about a workload or gosh, just attacking that back room in the basement that every time I walk past it, it drives me crazy. Like it's time to step into a little bit of action is typically what I think these physical things that pop up in me now
are. Oh my goodness, they're an invitation. You know, once mm-hmm. you get past the actual chronic portion of your pain journey, these little blips, these little whispers are an invitation to live such a huge full life. So having said that, you did mention that sweet baby. I would love for you to just give people a little snapshot of what your life looks like now that you have done the bulk of this work, that you're living in journal speak has become a second language for you, just like it is when you learn a foreign language and it kind of exists in the background, that you always have it available to you should you need it. What does your life look like today, Marianne?
So, I do not live 100% pain-free, and I don't believe that anyone ever will.
No, because there's no cure for human pain. Human pain is
Yeah, there's no cure for being a human. There's no cure for being a human.
Wish there was.
But, you know, one thing I'll say is had I not gone through all of this over the past several years and gotten to this state of what I think is like some level of enlightenment, right?
Yeah.
You kind of it is. It's a deeper level of awareness. I don't know how I would have ever had a baby had I not gone through and done all of this work mm-hmm. because just living a life was causing me extreme pain before and I didn't have a kid and then there's a kid and kids are super demanding and they need all of this stuff and they need to be put first. And so after I had my baby Willa, I started to feel pain again and anxiety and panic and everything. And you know what? Everything came back at me tenfold when she was born. But the beauty of it is that I knew what was happening
yep.
and I knew what to do. I started speaking with Nicole more. I started journaling more. I started being more aware. And I basically was saying to myself, it's okay. It's okay. This is going to go away. This is happening because I have a lot on my plate right now. This is a huge transition. It's okay. It's not going to last forever. And it's that kind of like internal dialogue that I think is the real stuff here because that was not available to me before.
And
it would have been like, oh my God, I can't handle this. I'm dying. I'm a terrible mother. Holy shit. Look what I'm doing. I can't even get out of bed. My feet hurt. My neck hurts. My hands hurt. I need to go to a doctor. Doctor, doctor, please help me. None of that happens.
No,
in fact,
none of
I mean, like if I just look at my medical history for the past year, the only time I've gone to a doctor was like check-ins for my pregnancy and then to have the baby.
Yeah.
I have not needed one time in the last couple of years to go see a doctor about any sort of ailment.
And even though
that's crazy,
and no, it's absolutely, it's beautiful. And it's not that we don't like doctors and it's not that we don't believe in the medical model. It is, you are a healthy, beautiful young woman who has a new baby everything should be available to you, and it is. And I know that you experience pain. I often tell people there's no cure for human pain, okay? There's no way you're ever going to go through the rest of your life and never have a headache or feel stiff or feel like, you know, your stomach is off. It just doesn't happen. It's not possible. But I would ask you, do you have chronic pain, Marian?
No.
No.
I do not.
No.
Absolutely not. And in fact, one little side note, you know, I'm very physically active now. I ride my bicycle to work. I run. I take bar method classes, which are pretty hardcore. And all of this is like fun and basically easy, you know, but sometimes I show up to my bar method class and like, I cannot lift my right leg. It is not going to happen. It is so stiff and crazy. And my teacher will come over and she'll say like, oh, Marian, you can modify if you have like a hip injury. And I just look over at her and I'm like, it's not an injury. I'm just stressed out.
Right. It'll pass.
Like, right. Like, and that's the thing. It's like people are like tuning forks, man. They pick everything up. And when someone like your teacher tells you, they look at you and they say you have an injury, you know, before I would have been the type of person to be like, oh, shit, I have an injury. And now I'm just like, nah, dude, I know what this is.
Yeah. It's, and you know what, listen, it is an invitation to live in a way that is so free. The other day, my son, who is 15 and in 10th grade and, you know, dealing with all the 15-year-old 10th grade kind of stuff we deal with, was walking around the kitchen and he was kind of holding his wrist, his right wrist in his left hand, and he was rolling it. And I said, hey, bud, you know, what's going on? And he said, and this is like, you know, my beautiful moments of triumphant parenting. He said, oh man, I don't know. I just have a lot of homework and I'm feeling it in my wrist. And I said, oh my God, I love you. Because I, at least in the small power that I have, am raising five human beings who acknowledge the importance of their emotional world, who know that, you know, my wrist didn't hurt yesterday and it won't necessarily hurt tomorrow. So I can acknowledge today that, dude, I'm feeling it a little bit. You know, it's just one of the ways we feel. And, you know, yeah. if people could just... So we're sitting here in this one moment, right? You and me, and I'm going to invite whoever is listening, whether it's in your earbuds or I'm talking to you in your car or you're laying in bed with your phone next to your head or however you're hearing this today, to understand that we live in a mind-body system, and sometimes we feel things in our hearts and sometimes we feel things in our bodies, and they are legit interchangeable. And if you can embrace mm-hmm. that concept, and if you can just sit with that gently for a moment, you have the power to change your entire life. Because, you know, Marian's story, I have been a witness to it. Every single thing that she mentioned to you today, plus much more, I have sat in the front row and watched it go down. And I'm going to tell you, this woman that you're hearing from today has a full, beautiful life. She has a husband. She has a beautiful baby. She has a pretty hardcore career, and she exercises and she's available to her friends and her family, caring for her mother. She's got it all. And that is available to you exactly the same. Exactly. We are all exactly the same when we suffer, and all these tools are available to you, whomever you are. So, you know, that's just my little plug for transform your life, because you can do it.
Hear, hear.
I just got on a soapbox there for a second. Sorry.
No, but it's really true. And, you know, there's a lot of, there's so much more to everybody's story, including my own, like all the tools and all the things that I did and all the tricks I played, you know, and all the, there's so much granular detail about how you get to feeling yeah. better. But I think the number one thing is just willing to be vulnerable. Are you willing to be vulnerable? Mm-hmm. Is it like time to like put the sword down and stop, you know, wanting to be perfect and allow yourself to be a beautifully imperfect human being?
Yes.
That was for me, it was like the universe was trying to tell me, Marian, it's time to take off your armor.
Yeah.
And just be a human. It's okay to cry. It's okay to just be yourself. And I really was resistant to that. And when I became open to it, my life has changed exponentially in so many beautiful ways.
Well, that couldn't be a more perfect note to thank you, Marian, so much for being here today and for opening your heart and your world to everyone listening. And until next time, this has been The Cure for Chronic Pain. See you next time. Bye.